last night, I was up monitoring the helicopter traffic as firefighters were trying to hold off the flames from Mount Wilson, the historic observatory that's there, all those telescopes and historic buildings, as well as the communication towers there that include KPCC's transmitter and all the other LA FM radio stations, the television stations that are there, other wireless communications, and the firefighters just with an extraordinary effort and holding off the fire from Mount Wilson. The Mount Wilson Observatory just tweeted, "We're safe from the Bobcat fire. Thanks to the heroic efforts of the firefighters from multiple agencies, the battle is not over yet." But what a wonderful stand that they were able to make last night, as they have been up there for days under very trying circumstances, trying to save the critical infrastructure and the historic science that is part of Mount Wilson's present and its history. Coming up later this hour on Air Talk, speaking of history, Bunker Hill in downtown Los Angeles, which had an extraordinary collection of architectural styles, but particularly Victorian gingerbread style mansions that were there. Some of the city's earliest, wealthiest residents lived atop Bunker Hill. Then those huge houses later became rooming houses for many of the lower income seniors who lived in the downtown Los Angeles area. And you saw that in noir films depicted in many of those, like Kiss Me Deadly. And then, of course, urban renewal came in, leveled all those homes, and now we have high-rise buildings. The music center is there. We have county and city government buildings that are there. Doesn't look anything like it did historically, but we're going to remember a new book, Bunker Hill, Los Angeles, that's just out with extraordinary photographs of Bunker Hill. But right now we turn our attention to COVID-19 as we do daily. With me is Dr. Shruti Gohill, UC Irvine Medical Center and School of Medicine. She is Associate Medical Director for Epidemiology and Infection Prevention. Dr. Gohill, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Let's talk first of all about the number of COVID-19 cases, hospitalizations in Southern California. Looks like pretty good news, doesn't it?
It really does. It looks like people really took to heart the recommendations for quarantining and keeping ourselves indoors. And I think maybe the fires had something to do with that as well, the air quality. Of course, our masking. And if we continue on this path, maybe we have a really good stead going into the fall season.
And again, I'd like to hear from listeners what your thoughts are about parts of you know, businesses or gatherings that you think should be considered to resume now that we're seeing better numbers, or if you don't want to see that at this point, you think we need to keep things pretty much where we're at until a vaccine. 866-893-KPCC or the Air Talk page, kpcc.org. Dr. Gohill, what aspects of public meetings or businesses do you think could reopen now that we're looking at these better numbers?
Yeah, it's really, I think it comes down to habitation and how well we're able to honor social distancing and crowd control. I think that businesses are slowly learning how they can modify whatever it is that they're doing. And, everybody wants to open, right? Businesses on their side and we on our side wanting to be consumers. And it seems like some of the time that has passed, people have started to put into protocols that seem educated. They seem like people can really try to make things happen with either plexiglass, or use of masks and some of the infighting I think that was going on about masking or not masking. I feel that people are being more attentive to that. So let's see. I think some of the businesses that we think would be reasonable, of course, we've had some of our department stores open up, sort of the clothing stores that have started to open up and then having crowd control strategies. I think anybody who can do a crowd control strategy is fair game. I think some of our restaurants who can also maybe operate at a half capacity takeout, half capacity socially distanced eating outdoors. I think that seems like it could potentially work out well. Bars, I have to tell you, that seems like a high risk, high risk activity, unless they could really honor social distancing.
What about bars that have outdoor areas? Do you think that's possible, or just keeping the distance and how people tend to talk loud when they're at bars, that's going to be a risk even outside?
I think outside makes a huge, huge difference. And, you know, the question I have is when you're outside, and, you know, sometimes when you are at a bar, part of what happens is you gather lots of people within your cohort, right? So you're going there to meet your friends who might be 10 of them. And in that case, I don't know about a bar, indoor or outdoor, but because you can't control for the fact that all 10 of those people had been honoring social distancing and masking for some time. So that's the question. You know, if you open up bars, you can do them outside. I think you could do them probably safely, but just put in protocols where, you know, you have no more than a party of X amount that would be safe.
Which is hard, because so often people want to go out in extended groups to bars, and that often is part and parcel of the social experience. And so for people to discipline themselves not to do that, not necessarily the easiest thing, particularly for younger people who perception is, well, what's the big deal if I get it? And Dr. Gohill, can you respond to that? Because it seems that so many of the cases that we are seeing now are among younger Southern Californians.
Yeah, I mean, again, they're, you know, young people, old people, we're all part of one big society. And wherever a young person gets sick and may or may not know that they're sick, and all the sort of ripple effects of the transmission and the pathways that you naturally will cross with other human beings because you exist in this world will then open up pathways to this virus to spread. It's just as simple as that, really. And we've seen it over and over, you know, in other communities, Florida, and many states across the nation, and of course in other countries as well. We know that France is seeing a resurgence. We know that other countries are seeing, they tried to open up, they're doing it, they're trying to figure out how you can live with this virus, know that you are a risk to other people. And the more you do, the easier it will be for all of us come spring of 2021, or, you know, the less spread we have, the easier and the faster we get over this.
Victoria writes on the AirTalk Facebook page, I'm ready for kids to be able to go to school in person. This is so hard on our kids and teachers. I hope everyone keeps doing what they need to so kids can get an education. Victoria, thank you for that. Dr. Gohill, what are your thoughts about in-person education?
Those comments are on target. You know, I think that in-person education, of course, there's value untold for in-person education. The difficulty here is the different age groups and the risk, really. They live, you know, we have dependent individuals who live in families with adults who can then get the disease, and older people who can then get the disease. So the ripple effect of children, even though they themselves may not get that sick, obviously, there's a problem there for spread. Can we reopen schools? I think if we really invested in very strict protocols, I'm talking about plexiglass, within desks, and hand hygiene on every desk, clean every desk with wipes, students wear masks, and figure out a smart way to keep children, which is really difficult at certain ages, to keep them from sharing too much, like food or hugs or spit of any kind. That's hard logistically to do. I don't think it's impossible. Singapore, Germany, many others have actually done this successfully. So I think we need to take a hard look at how we're going to invest to make this thing stay at bay as much as possible.
We're talking with Dr. Shruti Gohill, professor, UC Irvine School of Medicine. We're at 866-893-KPECC. Calvin in Long Beach asks, how come we haven't heard information about an increase in numbers after super spreader events? Events like the president's rallies, where there are large crowds with little to no people masking.
Oh, you know, I'm not sure that that's true, that we haven't heard about super spreader events. I think we have. It all depends on the different communities' actual rate of coronavirus at the time when these events occur. We have clear examples where there are super spreader events, large gatherings, and you get, you know, 2 incubation periods later, a uptick in that community. I think for the most recent events, we have yet to see, how that manifests. But I'm not sure that assertion is quite right. I do think that it's true that there are some events that have taken place where spread has not been so prolific, and that might be because maybe the rates were so incredibly low at the time at that place where the event occurred.
It is fascinating, though. You look at the protests in the streets, you look at religious gatherings on the beaches, some of these events that people were very concerned about spreading, people not masking close to each other, singing, shouting, chanting, that we have not seen, it seems, big outbreak. The things that seem to have been much more the problem are extended family gatherings, people getting together, presuming because they love the person or close to them, that somehow they're not going to, spread if they're asymptomatic. And hadn't that been much more the issue than these large outdoor gatherings?
Yeah, no, I think it's quite clear that outdoors is very helpful. And having the Earth's atmosphere to dilute the virus in the air is mission critical. And having these indoor gatherings with, even if you have 10 people, but if you're indoors and you can't dilute out that air or keep yourself from touching food that other people have, or utensils that other people are partaking in, and like a potluck or whatever, then obviously your risk is quite different, because this thing is not just air, it's about contact as well. So I think it's absolutely right that that when you're outdoors, your risk is going to be lower. I think that we've lived that dream for colds and flus for decades. But it still doesn't mitigate the fact that if you have a very large gathering, I'm thinking about, say, a large concert, for example, and people are out there and they're drinking or they're, doing things that would get them to be not masking and be, doing the normal social things that you do, hug people and talk to each other in close quarters, similar to a bar. That would probably, for example, be a high risk activity, even if it's outdoors.
Orange County has opened up movie theaters. Bob and Downey says, if restaurants are allowed to open, why not public libraries and movie theaters?
I think that, those two are a bit different. The libraries, I can see that. I can see how libraries could be handled similar to a department store with a crowd control mechanism, like, X number of people for any given amount of time, and people are, masked and required to mask and do their hand hygiene, et cetera. I could see that. A movie theater, I have to be honest that the mechanism, the air exchange and the overall ventilation of a movie theater, you certainly wouldn't want to fill that up if you could socially distance and operate at half or less capacity, and make sure that people are masked the entire time. How are you going to eat popcorn and watch a movie and do all the things you like to do? I'm not sure about a movie theater.
Okay, so even though you're in Orange County, it sounds like you're not rushing out to the theater, maybe the drive-in, but not the indoor. Yeah. Dr. Gohill, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. As always, have a good weekend. Stay safe. And thank you so much for sharing your expertise.
Thank you. Bye.
Dr. Shruti Gohill, UC Irvine Medical Center and School of Medicine, where she's professor. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPECC. We look back now at the historic neighborhood of Bunker Hill, a neighborhood that was completely razed during urban renewal of the 1960s and early 1970s. The music center, high rises, county office buildings, all of those have taken over where you had extraordinary old homes, mansions that were there on the hill, and later rooming houses for some of the lower income older residents of Los Angeles. We'll talk about the beauty and the noir of Bunker Hill in just 90 seconds on Air Talk.